Good morning, hello, and welcome to Ed Says. It's February 1st, 2017. Man, time flies by. You heard the number there, 888-574-2723. The phones are always open for you to discuss whatever it is you would like to discuss. I have my topics that I'm going to get to, but if you have something you want to talk about, or you want to yell at me about something I did already yesterday or the day before or weeks ago, feel free. On the list today, the ACLU reporting on Connecticut's police. We'll start with that. White privilege, ruffling feathers, silencing dissent, the idea that the media is not a tool of our government. Trump makes his pick. A ban is a ban, and the fallout continues. If the phone isn't your thing as far as talking to me directly, I try to make this disclaimer. Christian has had a rough few days. So when you call in, if you're calling to yell at me, don't yell at him. He does not put these words in my mouth. He is just there to screen the calls. So be nice to him. He's got it tough enough as it is, just being him. You can also find me on Twitter, at EdSaysCT, and the email is edsays@talkofconnecticut.com. And another disclaimer that I haven't put out there before, but I will. Should you decide to call the front desk and ask for my extension and leave me a voicemail, know that if it isn't related within the first few seconds to maybe a story or an interview possibility, I delete it because leaving me messages on the content of my show when you have the ability to interact in a two-way fashion, be it talking, tweeting, or emailing, is frowned upon. Voicemail is a one-way form of communication. Essentially, what I get when it comes to my voicemails that aren't related to work or show booking, it's just somebody ranting about something I said, not looking to have a discussion, just telling me how wrong I am about something and how mad they are. That promptly gets the 7, which on our voicemail system means delete. So for those of you who either daily or weekly or monthly like to call and leave me voicemails, know that they go unlistened as soon as I determine that they are not related to guest booking or story ideas. So front load your voicemails with real content. And if you are looking to engage in conversation or to critique the show, use one of the other avenues, be it the phone number, the Twitter, or the email, skywriting even. I would be able to read on the air and get back to you. As far as your voicemails go, I can't play them back on the air. So just know that, because it is a daily occurrence of my 7, the number has worn off. I know which button it is, obviously, because it's a phone keypad, and we're all familiar with them. But it's just beep, 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 deleted, deleted, deleted. Up first on the show today is an ACLU report that says it makes it tough for people to complain about police misconduct. Earning Trust, addressing police misconduct complaints in Connecticut, was drawn from research online and telephone surveys, and it shows that police agencies in the state fail to clearly post their complaint policies and complaint forms online and refuse to accept anonymous complaints. If you refuse to accept complaints or make it difficult, and yes, there are probably a number of complaints that are of no merit, but if you ice out all of them, there is no room to improve. There is no one pointing out what could possibly be wrong. It is a bad practice, whether it is in policing, or in business, or in your everyday life. If you're in a restaurant and somebody registers a complaint that, your meatloaf is bad, is rotten, and you go, get out, and continue to serve rotten meatloaf, you will find yourself shut down or out of business, either by the government or just by people not showing up. Complaints are a form of feedback. They say that many people seeking to file police complaints in Connecticut will be unable to find information from their local departments. Others will encounter misinformation or intimidation. And that is disappointing. And it should be disappointing to everyone. Are some complaints without merit? Yes. Are some legitimate? Most definitely. If you can't register a complaint somewhere, and the person taking it can't do so without rolling their eyes and making it seem as though, everything's a problem, well, then you're doing it wrong. As they looked into it, The numbers say that 40 of Connecticut's law enforcement agencies have not clearly posted either both their department complaint form or their policy online, which is against state requirements, unless 43% of all agencies surveyed by phone claim that complaint forms are only available at police stations, which is a violation of state policy. And many agencies in the state continue to impose barriers to accepting those complaints, such as refusing to accept or actively discouraging anonymous complaints, requiring complainants to submit forms only at police stations, and mandating notarization of complaint forms. Many of the agencies surveyed by phone could not answer questions, could not be reached to answer questions, refused to answer questions, provided inaccurate information, or contradicted information posted on departments' websites. If this doesn't trouble you, I wonder what is and what will. Again, this is not a condemnation of the police, because this is not up to the officers on the street. This is up to those who run operations. And these are all things, as required by the state, that should be done. We all have to do things whether we like them or not. I am required by the federal government, when I am on air at a station, either me or my producer, to take meter readings from our towers. We have to say whether the tower lights are on. We have to say what the power is, end of times, and all this other nonsense, because it is nonsense, because it is all on a computer now. We can go back and look and see what that information was. But if we are live in studio, we have to fill out. And that is minor in comparison to registering what could be a legitimate complaint that somebody has in their experience. Again, there could be some that aren't legit. Some that are just people who have free time on their hands. We all know them. They're the I need to speak with your manager type. But by sweeping them all up and all away, oh, well, we got a few fake complaints, so let's just sweep everything away. It is not a service to the people of the state, the people who these departments serve. And then there are issues with the model policy and complaint form, which causes confusion and undermines the process in the state. And that's just here in Connecticut. And I bring this up as well because there is a heavily redacted FBI report that also says there is, within law enforcement agencies, the possible infiltration by white supremacists. It's from an October 2016 internal intelligence, or 2006 assessment, as the agency raised the alarm over white supremacist groups' historical interest in infiltrating law enforcement communities, etc. And it details a number of issues where it happened. And I bring this up because the KKK in Maine apparently is out handing out flyers. So if there is not a system in which someone can register a complaint that goes along with that, it will kind of continue untested. And I also bring it up because in New York City, all police there will have to wear body cameras by the end of 2019. Cameras have been said to be too expensive. What do we do with the data? It's unfair. But everything says that cameras are better for the officers and better for the citizens. It cuts down on those complaints that we were talking about, those illegitimate complaints, because you have video evidence. It keeps everyone honest. But there are those who complain against it. But when it comes to New York City, body cameras will be on every officer in New York City. 888-574-2723, the number into the studio. Up next, we're going to look at a Connecticut town where the idea of white privilege is ruffling a few feathers. That's next here on Ed Says. And now we turn our attention to Westport and the idea of white privilege. As the Westport Diversity Council announced a contest giving a cash prize of $1,000 for the best student essay on white privilege, which has upset those who claim it paints the town in a bad light, apparently. The question is, for submissions, describe how you understand the term white privilege. To what extent do you think this privilege exists? What impact do you think it has on your life, whatever your racial or ethnic identity, and in our society more broadly? So, it is an opportunity, in 1,000 words or less, to say how you feel about it, one way or the other. You define it, how you understand it to be, and whether or not you think it exists, and how it pertains to you. It's not one side or the other. But there are those who are angry about it. An annual contest open to high school students in Westport, saying the council saying the goal was to increase awareness, foster understanding, and promote understanding in this arena. 888-574-2723. Let's go to Bob in Springfield. Bob, you want to talk about police?
I wanted to talk about the Bernard and Tony were on earlier talking about Hartford, and I did want to make mention about what you led with the story on the police, just that, you know, you might want to take those calls that you say you delete, and you might want to listen to them in case your meatloaf is bad and you're not out of a job in a couple of months, you know?
Well, Bob, as I explained, those voicemails are just a way for people to spout off with no intention of opening themselves up to discussion. I make myself very available via the airwaves, via Twitter, and via email. Every email is read and responded to, and every call is taken here on the show. I do not condone people leaving their one-sidedness on a voicemail to rant and rave. So I don't think I will find myself out of a job anytime soon. And if I do, so be it. So did you have anything worthwhile you wanted to contribute, or is it just insults?
No, that was a constructive criticism, which you seem to have a hard time taking.
Well, no, where's the criticism? Where's the criticism? What are we talking about? Are we talking about guests on a previous show? Are we talking about the ACLU report that says it's hard for people to register a complaint against the police department?
I'm talking about that one where you say it's hard to register a complaint. I'm saying if your listeners have a complaint against you, you might want to take a listen to what they're saying.
And again, I say I give them plenty of avenues, and I am not dictated by the state to do anything. I am dictated by my bosses, and if they start to say I need to listen to my voicemails, I will. But as my experience, those voicemails tend to be much like this call. Not a criticism, just a complaint in which you are not looking to have a dialogue. I am not a state agency. I am an individual who makes myself available. I'm also not a business. I work for a business, and I have this show. But I make myself available in a multitude of ways, just as you called right now with your criticism, to which I am responding. This is how criticisms are registered on this show.
I called to talk about Hartford and the crime and
let's talk about it.
Okay, that's what I called to talk about.
Well, let's talk about it. I'm waiting.
All right, so I'm saying that Brad Davis and Dan have been there for years. They said themselves they've been there for years, and this is a total surprise to them. Well, they're obviously part of the problem where they don't have the intelligence, or they don't have the concern, or they don't have the truth in them to tell, you know, Hartford's a cesspool, and the school system and the people that are there are, you know, broken china or broken dishes, you know, and to have people want to, in the past, bus kids from Hartford to Avon or Simsbury, or, you know, to have these delinquent kids, and they even said, Tony and Bernard said, the majority of them are dysfunctional, and their parents are dysfunctional. So it's not a racist thing, it's just a reality thing, that there's this whole cesspool in Hartford, and now the governor is going to try and take money from Avon and Simsbury and other towns, West Hartford, and try and dump more money into this system that's so far broken. And it's just...
Well, I cannot speak to what Brad and Dan said and what they feel and what they know. I can only speak to what I think. And using words like cesspool and delinquent in the same sentence you're describing children in schools, I think is problematic. Because don't forget, as your neighbors go, go you. And yes, Hartford does have its problems, and it is in financial straits. And there has been corruption in the past. But the problem is, you are blaming people who are victims of it, of a failed system.
Bernard said himself that deal with the city because what comes out of the city flows into the suburbs. And that's exactly true, that you do have this cancer or this cesspool, the crime. I mean, people are getting shot every week in Hartford. They're not getting shot in Avon or West Hartford or Glastonbury. They're getting shot in Hartford. They're getting robbed in Hartford. So you do have this cancer that's growing, and even Bernard said it flows into the suburbs. You guys better be doing something to help us. Well,
and I agree. And the thing is, what are you going to do? What it sounds like you want to do is just turn your back on Hartford entirely. And all that will do is foster more problems.
I'm saying that for years people knew this was the problem, and they need to address the issues. And for Brad and Dan to say, oh, they either have their head in the sand or they were whatever, this is all new to us. Well, it wasn't new to the people in the suburbs. They knew they didn't want to have their kids go into Hartford schools. They knew they didn't want the Hartford students to come into their schools. And they call it racist. Well, it's not that racist. It's reality. These kids are dysfunctional. Their families are dysfunctional. Why mix, you know, everyday wear with fine china? The kids in Avon, you can take the textbooks from the 1950s, the math books in 1950, and you could put those into the Avon schools because math hasn't changed, okay? So basically math hasn't changed. So those kids in Avon with old books could learn geography for the most part, mathematics and science, okay, which hasn't changed that much. And they would still go leaps and bounds because they have parents that are there working with them. They have teachers there working with them. And they could excel past the kids who have the computers and everything else you can dump into that school because there's a dysfunction in home.
Well, Bob, I thank you for the call. I'm up against a break, but I think it's beyond a dysfunction in home. It is a dysfunction in opportunity. This idea that everyone who lives in this, and describing one group of children as fine china and the other as your everyday is just appalling to me. It is all about situational. Nobody wants to be born into poverty and into a situation where they really have nothing going for them in the schools, in their town, or their city, and anything to work for. And that's what needs to be corrected. There needs to be opportunity across all levels. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Ed Says. We started talking about an ACLU report on how it's difficult for police, for individuals to make complaints about police in the state of Connecticut. And then the direction turned to Hartford and the schools there. And the idea that students shouldn't be going to other towns from Hartford, and that Hartford is somehow a cesspool were the words used, and that it's unsavable, I don't know, and that this is just what... There are bad parents across all lines. Trust me, I've seen parents of means in the suburbs who are terrible parents. And this idea that every single parent in Hartford is a terrible parent and there's dysfunction and all the kids are bad. And it just seems to be a bit pessimistic. Let's go to Joe in Newington. Good morning, Joe.
Well, a lot of the parents try. There's no doubt about it. And teachers have a hard job also. You gotta say that.
I would argue against that ever. I'm on the teacher side 100 times. It doesn't matter if it's suburb, city, affluent, poor. Teachers have to put up with the most BS from the kids to the parents to the administrations.
hey, they put up with me, you know, so they got to give them credit. Anyway, no matter what anyone says, and it's documented, I mean, there's a deliberate dumbing down of society. If you could read, if you could do math, and you're powerful, they don't want you like that. They want you like a lemming, just to go along and get along and pull the lever, and that's it. Like that, there's no doubt about it. A lot of these kids that I've dealt with, you know, you ask them a simple question, sophomore in high school, like, you know, what's 0.375 as a fraction? I mean, you learn that in first grade, second grade, and I don't know, man, I'm chilling now. It's phenomenal. There's no doubt about it. And if you get her on, Charlotte Iserby, who wrote the book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, and it's available as a PDF on the internet, you can download it. It's all documented there.
Well, Joe, thank you for the call. Let's go to Ed in Summers. Good morning, Ed. Ed, are you there? Go ahead, Ed.
Yes, I, Paul Hartford, brought up one raise there. Know all about it. The teachers cannot, and the teachers have a hard job, don't get me wrong, but you can't have a kid go to school and just sit there and sleep through the classes and not do anything and graduate and push them through. They're really made to push these kids through, and you're not doing a kid any good, you're not doing anybody any good by doing that, number one.
Now, does that come from the teachers, or does that come from the administration who's trying to keep the numbers up so they can get funding or whatever?
I don't know. I mean, probably both, you know? I mean,
I would argue, from my experience, I would argue that that comes from above, and then oftentimes teachers are forced to move students along who perhaps they shouldn't. And I agree with you. There are standards that need to be met, and if you don't meet them, I'm sorry if it hurts feelings. I'm sorry if the kid can't play for the football team or whatever. But if you're not learning and you're not achieving the certain standards, then you don't move on. That's just how it was. It's called being held back.
Right, and you're not helping the kid. You're actually hurting them, technically.
I agree.
And the other thing is, the community and the parents have to be involved. I mean, you could dump a ton of money into a city or anywhere. If the parents are not involved, if the community is not involved, you're not going to make strides. You're not going to be able to move forward. And not telling people, and there's like a secret code in Hartford, because I live there, you know, if there's a crime being made or a crime being committed, we're not going to talk about it. We're not going to say anything. We're going to act like we never saw it.
Now, is that the citizens? Is that the citizens that won't say anything, like the no snitching, or is that the city not reporting it?
No, I think it's the citizens that are living there. You know, they want to be labeled a snitch and stuff like that. But you know what? You're not doing yourself any good, and you're not doing community. You got to step up, and, you know, like I said, Hartford could be a beautiful place, and still is in certain areas. But you really got to, it's got to be a community effort, it's got to be a religious effort, it's got to be a parent effort, it's got to be a whole bunch of things together, striving for that one goal, making it a beautiful city, and having your kids get the best education they can and everything else to go with it. And if they do that, you can make strides. You really can.
I thank you for the call. One of the things that I will point out is that for a lot of the parents there, they're working multiple jobs in order to provide. And I am lucky enough that I have my one job, I can provide, and I should be able to give time of myself to my kids or kid when it comes to school, being involved. I plan on being very involved. And when you're working two or three jobs, it's a matter of time. Time is finite. We don't have but what we have. And if they are spending all their time working all these jobs in order to provide, I can't fault them for not being as involved as they could be. Now, whether that is the wages that we're paying, not providing enough for somebody to make a living, whatever the cause is, not everyone is out there who's a parent being a layabout on the couch watching Netflix and ignoring their kids. There are plenty of socioeconomic reasons behind it. This doesn't mean it doesn't need to be addressed, but we also shouldn't be vilifying those who are just trying to make it. Let's go to Frank in Watertown. Frank, Hello? You there?
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, Frank.
Okay, my kid's a teacher, biology teacher, has a master's. She was in Wyndham.
Florida now, and she had a situation in Florida where she was given her first year teaching too. Kids that weren't supposed to be as bright as the other kids that were in the lower levels, and a little bit of troublemakers and stuff. And she took those kids on her own, and she made them buckle down and learn. And at the end of the year, last year, they ended up being number one. They beat the smart kids. So it's a lot of it is up to the teacher and putting the time in and convincing the kids to do it. Now, she had to threaten them a little bit, like, you know, you're going to flunk, and your parents are going to come here, and I'm going to tell them why you flunked. So they got a little scared, and they passed, and they surpassed the smart kids. So a lot of times it's the teacher involved. She'll spend 8-10 hours on a weekend doing programs for them and trying to keep them interested. So a lot of it is the teachers. And
you know what it also sounds like? She was able to adapt the curriculum to their needs. And a lot of times
exactly.
we have a one-size-fits-all kind of thing. And people learn differently. I learn by doing and by hands-on and making a mistake. If I do something wrong, I go, oh, can't do it that way. And that's how I've always learned. Some people are visual learners. And that needs to be addressed. And your daughter sounds like a good teacher. And
Real good. You
can see, with a good teacher, you can get the results. But like you said, 8 hours on the weekends, that's what teachers do. Like, I've said it multiple times. Somehow in my life, I am surrounded by friends who are teachers or lawyers, which seems to be a good thing because the teachers rub off on my kids and the lawyers can cover my ass if I do anything wrong.
Exactly right.
But with these teachers, I hear the stories where, you know, they wake up early. They have to provide a lot of stuff on their own from their own pocket for the classrooms if they want to do anything. And then they get home and it's emails and texts. From parents. Like, if my parents wanted to talk to a teacher, there was, you know, the meeting day, or you had to call and set up a meeting. There wasn't this 24-hour accessibility. And just imagine how many issues these teachers have to deal with from parents who really aren't that active in their kids' education, except when their kid is in trouble.
Yeah, and you know what? You're right. When it says you supply stuff, I'll snag pens from everywhere, and I give them to my kid. I'll give them like 50, 70, 80 every time I ship them to Florida, and she puts them on the desk, and the kids get to use them because they don't even have pens.
It's incredible.
You know what I'm saying? They can't even get money for pens. So it's something simple like that. The kids appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the call and the story, and all the best to your daughter as a teacher. And that's the thing. I don't think a lot of people understand. This is what life is. It's a living outside your experience. I had decent education growing up. I don't know if any of my schools were ranked. There was some violence in my high school before I got there. They put a fence up around it so it looked like a prison. I probably could have done more. I don't think I am the smartest person in the room, but I'm certainly not the dumbest. I think I'm somewhere in the middle. And had I applied myself and been more interested in learning, if I had been as interested in learning now then as I am now, I probably wouldn't be sitting here. But back then, I was interested in talking, which I still am, which is why I sit here. But the opportunities were there for me. And it's more difficult now. As the money has dried up. And they ask a lot of teachers these days. 24-hour access seems a bit excessive. And again, you have got these administrations with their zero tolerance and their need to teach to the test. And all of that just doesn't work. We got to remember, they're kids. For crying out loud, we talk about the brain not being fully developed till 26. And I know I was an idiot till 30, maybe even still some today. And we just got to remember that they're not numbers. They're not stats. They're kids. All that matters is they're getting an education. Well, some might take longer than others. Some might move faster than others. And that's okay. We need to be able to embrace our shortcomings. For whatever reason, many of us have a problem with being faulted, with having flaws. And there's nothing wrong with that. So you took an extra year to finish. I took 7 years to get my lousy mass comm degree. Now, mind you, I was part-time for a few years, and I didn't show up to some classes, and I was working, and I can make all the excuses I want. But who cares? You know, in fourth grade, I was in the gifted program. I got to go to another school once a week and learn cool stuff. And I bombed out of that because I wasn't interested. And in fifth grade, I bombed out of the first. They ranked the math classes. You had the smart class and the regular class. I was in the smart, then in the regular, and then dropped down to the slower class. They made a special third class, and I was in it because I hated math, and I hated the idea of imaginary numbers, because if they're imaginary numbers, they're imaginary answers, at least in my head. That's how it worked out. Admitting to your flaws is not such a bad thing. Let's go to Matt in New Hartford. Good morning, Matt. How's it going?
Hi, Ed. How are you?
Doing well. What do you have to say?
Well, I just wanted to tell you I'm a 43-year teacher, public school, taught at a prep school also for 3 years. So I've run the gamut from the poorest district to probably the most posh school you can get in Connecticut. I just wanted to tell you that as far as social promotion, I guess you can call it, where, you know, teachers sometimes get afraid to fail a student because the administration puts pressure on them to make sure that all their students are learning. If a kid is going to be held back, a lot of times the parent comes in with a lawyer and says, "Don't, you're not going to hold my kid back." So we get kids, you know, going through grade after grade, and not with the skills to go to the next grade.
Yeah, and I'd mentioned that previously, and that's problematic. And again, it comes with admitting your shortcomings. And as a parent, it's not to the child's benefit. Oh, it sounds good. Oh, but all his friends are here, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? Kids make friends easily. Most of the time, they will make new friends. If you were to move, that kid would have to make new friends. So focus on the important part of the kid. And if the educators say this kid is not ready, you don't send them up.
Right. And let me just mention one more thing, because when I was at Hope, you started talking about something else. Teachers, for my whole life, I don't feel in the whole 43 years I taught that I was fairly compensated for what I do. There are people that make millions upon millions of dollars doing so many different things, sports and everything else. Teachers, we have. You're entrusted with our most precious thing, the future, and yet you get paid a fraction of what we should be paid, as well as the fact that, I know my whole career, I always have to have a second or a third job just to make my financial situation work. Bus drivers, we pay the bus drivers nothing. And then everybody's wondering why a kid fell asleep and the bus driver didn't notice it. Well, you know what? When you're driving 30 kids, 40 kids, you should have somebody in there that's real competent. So, you know, we have things totally upside down. We feel a football player is worth $10 million a year, but we don't feel a teacher is worth $100,000. And that would be fairly good pay, but teachers, start off at 40,000, but that's really not very good.
Well, thank you for the call, Matt, and I don't disagree with you. It is why I will only take my sports via television. I'm not going to give them my money anymore because it is cost prohibitive for a family to go to these games now. And these guys are making ridiculous amounts of money, and they keep gouging us for more and more and more, and it is not worth it. And when it comes to teacher pay, there are those that would argue, well, you get summers off and this, that, and the other. But as I said, teaching isn't what it used to be when it comes to being financed, having to get supplies, and your accessibility. And as you said, lawyers and administration, the teachers are fighting a losing battle most of the time. 888-574-2723, the number into the studio. We can continue this conversation about education. Plus, I want to get into the idea of silencing dissent. That's next on Ed Says here on the Talk of Connecticut. Welcome to Ed Says. Well, welcome back if you've been here. And let's go right to the phones. We got Larry in Bridgeport holding, talking about teachers. Good morning, Larry. How's it going?
Hey, good. How are you, Ed?
I can't complain.
Good, good. Enjoy the show. I think you do a very nice job. Just a couple of comments on the teacher issue. Yeah, I really believe the teachers are underpaid. And you know what really, I think, in some ways hurts the system is some of these administrators, they have multiple layers of administrators that get paid more than the teachers. And it's just, it adds to the whole thing. It adds to the whole, you know, fiscal mess. So, you know, the teachers who are in the classroom working with the kids every day, they really should be paid more and respected more than they are. The other comment I would just make, speaking of teachers, I don't know if you're aware of this, the teachers' pension fund in the state of Connecticut is actually extremely underfunded right now.
Didn't they go 30 years without paying to it?
That's correct. And actually, we're not talking millions. We're talking billions of dollars underfunded. And you talk about ticking time bombs in Connecticut. Nobody's talking about that. You've got more teachers retiring. They're going to need that money at some point to live on. And Connecticut's not funding that program. And, you know, I just thought I'd mention that because nobody talks about it.
Yeah, you know? It's one of our big problems with a budget when you talk about where our money is. The idea that they kicked that can down the road for so long. And that's why I'm not a Malloy defender, but at the same time, some of these things didn't happen on his watch or the previous three administrations.
No. I would say I don't blame Malloy, Governor Malloy, for that. However, I think under him and previous administrations, it has been ignored. And I think, the Connecticut residents just want to have a conversation and some transparency, whoever's in office.
And get something
done. We just
want
to know what's going on and, you know, not brush these things under the carpet. And also, cutting deals with some of these big companies like GE, and now we're talking about Aetna, who have billions and billions of dollars, and Connecticut taxpayers are giving them, you know, basically held hostage in order to keep them here. The whole thing is crazy to me. I mean,
it's like the sports thing. We're willing to give these guys and these companies all these cuts and this money to keep them here or their stadiums, and yet we shortchange our police, our fire, and our teachers when it comes to taking care of them. We're taking care of these bigger businesses that have... I mean, the NFL is one of the richest companies in the world. And
right.
We keep going, showing up every Sunday for what one is a subpar product. Most of the teams stink. There's a handful of teams that are good every year, and we keep seeing them. Atlanta, the exception this year. Where the hell did they come from? And then they want $80 for a jersey. Try taking a family to a game. I refuse. And then they get you for parking. Holy cow. $50 to park.
I agree with you at 100%. I will not go to a professional game, of course, unless someone gives me the tickets, which never happens. I will not go and put money in their pocket. I'd rather go to a high school or a college game. I just won't put money in their pocket. Plus, these athletes, a lot of them, how do they act on and off the field? They're no role models for young people.
And you certainly shouldn't. I mean, go to a Hartford Wolfpack game. Friday, it's like Dollar Hot Dog Nights. It's a good game every time I've seen it. If you're further south, there's the Sound Tigers. Like, support the minor leagues. And just take in the major leagues on TV, because all they're doing is sucking dollars that you shouldn't be spending to them. And I'm glad. Well, we're on the same page, Larry.
I agree. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. We're probably alone in that belief, because everywhere you go, somebody's got a sticker on there. And don't get me wrong. Like, I'm a lifelong fan. I grew up during the heyday, the Joe Gibbs era of the Washington football team. And, you know, I grew up with championships and a heated rivalry with the Cowboys, who call themselves America's team, but nobody likes them except just these gross losers. Christian, you getting all that?
Yeah. Gross losers, huh?
Christian is a Cowboys fan. But, like, I named my dog Gibbs. Like, I got it. I'm into it. I'm a hockey fan, but it is just one experience that put me against it was in when I was working in Boston. I went to see the Patriots play Washington, and my company bought me tickets because they were awesome, and we got them online. Somebody had sold their tickets for that day, and when I got to the gate, they voided them. They said, you can't use these. And my buddy had driven up from Virginia to see Washington play. I had gotten him his ticket, so he came all that way, and they're like, nope, you can't come in. And this is after spending $50 in parking in that dump. That place is basically a high school stadium. It's so tiny. Like, it's a fake team. And They voided our tickets. I had to go buy two new tickets. They basically made money on me twice. I didn't spend another dime in that place. We had made it so I didn't have to drive. I was going to spend hundreds of dollars in beer and food, and they lost that because they had to get it from me again for a ticket because I didn't use their resale. What? How stupid is that? A ticket is a ticket. Well, you own the rights to the seat, not the seat. Like, it was just, I was out of my mind, apoplectic. And I pledged that day to never give a dime to a pro sports team again. That's why the hat I wear, if you ever see me in a ball cap, it's got no logos on it. Because I'm not paying extra money for their stupid logo. Let's go to Bob in Suffield. Good morning, Bob.
How you doing, Ed?
Doing all right. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to give you, I agree with you finally on a subject.
What? Write it down. February 1st, 2017.
I know. But I want to agree with you. You know, I've been going to high school football games and like that gentleman before you called. And you know what? It's more exciting. These kids are fighting for their school. I mean, why go to, I used to go to baseball, Red Sox baseball games like it was normal. But a lot of my, I disagree. A lot of people stop going. Attendance at a lot of these major league teams, you know, are really down. You take like that Florida Marlins. They're dying. Toronto. They're dying.
Yeah, the Islanders.
They're dying. You know, so people are fed up with these big contracts in football, baseball, hockey. You go to a high school game, Ed, and you get your money's worth, you know?
Yeah, and I agree with you, and hopefully we see more of it because the price you're paying isn't worth it. It isn't worth the experience.
No.
Thank you for the call. It's not worth the parking and the walking and the prices of the food and the experience in the stadium. Maybe I'm just old and crotchety, but I mean, I don't want to deny my kid that experience. At the same time, you're not going to be able to afford it. It's ridiculous. And that experience at the Patriots game also resulted in the Patriots just crushing Washington and Belichick keeping Brady until the fourth quarter late and against Joe Gibbs, like basically running up the score against the nicest man to ever coach in football and a Hall of Famer. This is when he had come back. And it's that point that I lost all respect for that franchise, that and their obnoxious fans. But this isn't sports talk.